Our first presenter this morning is Nancy Miller, who went to the prestigious University of Chicago Harris School of Public Policy. She worked at HCPA, which is the precursor of the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services. She is a member of the Aging and Public Health section of APHA, so we're always happy when people cross over and come into the disability section to present their papers. She also has another interesting distinction. She's the PI on a grant to APHA, which is, I think, an unusual combination of things. And it's from the Retirement Research Foundation. And she's going to present this morning. Let you get started. One other point of clarification before we start is that we really want our speakers, again, to be disability friendly and explain what's on slides, not read slides, but tell the audience what's on slides. So there's a new addition to our packet of minutes, and it says, please describe your slides. So if this happens to you later on in the day, that's our new message to the speakers. And so you'll see it.
Great. Thank you. I want to thank you also for coming out this morning, bright and early here in San Francisco. I will say, although my primary section is aging and public health, I'm a secondary member of the disability section. So I'm with you. I will say my research over time, even though I focus a lot on older adults with disabilities, I've also have a longstanding interest in working age and actually have some work now related to children and youth with autism, so I do follow this section. I would also say I should not have left. I have edited and saved this approximately three different times, which perhaps demonstrates my lack of skills. Hopefully we have the right version going here, but if not, I'll correct us along the way. So I'm going to talk this morning about the receipt of U.S. Preventive Services Task Force Preventive Services among adults with and without disabilities, and I'd like to begin by recognizing my co-authors, Adele Kirk, who's with us, and a faculty member with me at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, and then Brandy Alston, who's a recent graduate, and Lucas Gloss, who's currently in our doctoral program, and this is funded by the National Institute of Disability and Rehabilitation Research, and I'd like to continue to express my support to them. So a little bit in terms of why this research is important. We know that the receipt of preventive services is key to maintaining health across the lifespan. A most recent statement of that came from the National Prevention Council in 2011. These services include immunizations, screening tests for conditions such as hypertension and cancer, and counseling for behaviors such as smoking, and exercise related to adults who may be overweight. Receipt of recommended prevention services continues to be suboptimal. A couple of examples of this. In 2008, from the National Agency for Healthcare Research and Policy, their disparities reports, 2008, no racial or ethnic group approached the state line achievable benchmark for screening for breast cancer, and rates of screening actually had declined between 2000 and 2008 for Hispanic women. Another example, only 75% of adults received correct cholesterol screening, and there was variation by age, ethnicity, income, and insurance status. AHRQ, as well as a number of national and state organizations, hold that disparities in the receipt of preventive services is an area that needs improvement. Focusing particularly on adults with disabilities, we all know that the share of the population that has a disability is expected to increase, partly due to the growth of the older population, and the older population experiences higher rates of disability relative to adults age 18 to 64. The previous research in this area related to the receipt of preventive services has been somewhat mixed, with some studies finding higher rates of preventive services, some studies finding lower rates of preventive services. But at least in our reading of this literature, those inconsistencies are due in part to different measures of disability, the duration of the disability, the particular data source, as well as the particular screening services that are being examined. Previous research has also demonstrated that having a usual source of care is an important predictor of receipt of preventive services, and some work suggests that a usual source of care that is a provider relative to a site is an even stronger predictor of receipt of preventive services. Although, as with the previous bullet, there are some variations depending on the particular services that one looks at. In terms of people with disabilities, we all know that individuals with disabilities can benefit from promotion and prevention services much as the general population. But work from James Rimmer, who I believe has been a past section chair of this section, has done some very important work related to preventive services, and he argues that it's also important to alleviating the severity of disability and preventing the development of secondary conditions among individuals with disabilities. So our approach, and I'll talk a little bit more about this, but our approach to defining disability is consistent with the ICF. And it's also consistent with NIDER's emphasis on the paradigm of disability, which emphasizes the interface of a person in his or her environment. And it's also consistent with the approach that's used in the National Healthcare Disparities Reports. So in this research, we basically do three different things. First of all, we look at the predictors of having a usual source of care that's a provider or a site relative to no usual source of care. And then we look at the effect of a usual source of care on people's receipt of preventive services. And we examine and also test whether having a provider is more important than a site in those receipt of services. And then we also look at whether there's an interaction between having a disability and a usual source of care, the thinking being that perhaps having a usual source of care may in fact be more important for people with disabilities. We use Anderson's behavioral model of healthcare, which initially focused on individual characteristics, the well-known predisposing, enabling, and need characteristics over the 50 years now in development of that model. It's been greatly expanded, and the particular version that we use has four components that focus on external environmental characteristics, characteristics of the population, which were Anderson's initial focus in his model, the actual use of services, and then health outcomes as they relate to use of services. We have three hypotheses. First of all, we predict that people who have a usual source of care are going to be more likely to receive preventive services than those who lack a usual source of care. We think that having a usual source of care that's a provider is more important than a site. And again, we also think that there may be a stronger effect of having a usual source of care for people with individuals with disabilities. We use the Medical Expenditure Panel Survey, which is, you may be familiar with this, but it's a subsample of the National Health Interview Survey, which follows people over a roughly 2-year period, includes several measures that are important to our research, including sociodemographic and insurance measures, as well as health status information, functional limitations, and healthcare access and use measures. For our study, we pool MEPS data for 2001 to 2007. Our sample size is approximately 39,000 people. We actually have to pool that number of years because although the overall sample size is large, with our measures of disability, the sample gets quite small for people, particularly people with complex limitations, which I'll return to. Our variable of interest, or what we're focused on, is the usual source of care. And again, we look at whether a person has no usual source of care, a site such as an outpatient clinic, or a provider. And then following Anderson, we look at predisposing characteristics of age, gender, race, and ethnicity, which include white, black, and Hispanic, marital status, and different levels of education. Additional enabling resources include income and health insurance. Our measures of health insurance for this study are no health insurance, private insurance, or public insurance, which would include Medicare, Medicaid. I'll come back to that in our implications. We use measures of disability and self-reported health status as our measures of need. Our measure of disability is consistent with the work that Barbara Altman, also a member of this section, has developed over several years. Barbara looks at measures related to having a basic limitation, a complex limitation, or both a basic and complex limitation. We follow that so that our measures of basic limitations include having a physical, sensory, cognitive, or mental health limitation. Our measure of complex is whether they have functional limitations or work-related limitations, and then both is whether they have basically both a basic and complex. Most people in our study have either a basic limitation or both basic and complex. We have under 500 people who have a complex limitation only, which just suggests that for many people with disabilities, there may often be more than one disability. And then we also look at whether the individual resides in a metropolitan statistical area and one of four regions in the country. For our usual source of care, because it's an ordered measure with a conceptual ordering going from no usual source of care to having a provider, we use a generalized ordered LOGIT model. We use ordered, should not be ordered LOGIT, it should just be plain old LOGIT models for our measures of preventive services because they're basically receipt of a service or not receipt of a service. And then we have one outcome measure that is a summary measure, which looks at the percentage of recommended services received. And for that, we use an ordinary least squares. I should say, because it was in a version and not in this version, the measures that we're looking at specifically, the vast majority of these are U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommendations, A or B recommendations. Five are those recommendations. So they're blood pressure screening, cancer screening for cervical, breast cancer, and colon cancer, counseling related to smoking. We also look at counseling related to exercise among adults who are obese, which is kind of a first look at a B-rated U.S. Preventive Services Task Force measure. And then we also look at cholesterol screening, which is tracked by the AHRQ. So we account for the complex survey design, and we do some bootstrapping to build confidence intervals. So very quickly, descriptively, adults with disabilities were somewhat older than those without disabilities. Prevalence of disability was lower among Hispanics relative to whites and blacks. Black adults had a higher prevalence of complex and both basic and complex activity limitations, consistent with much previous research. As education and income increased, the prevalence of disability declines. Individuals with complex and both basic and complex were less likely to be uninsured, more likely to have public insurance. I should say that adults with only a basic limitation, so something like a sensory impairment, actually had a somewhat higher rate of being uninsured. Adults with disabilities were much less likely to have no usual source of care and much more likely to have a usual source of care that was a provider. Adults with disabilities, this is a preventative that I did not catch in going through here. This should all be preventive services. For most services, adults with disabilities were much more likely to receive the preventive services, with the exception of cervical and breast cancer screening. And although they were more likely to receive individual services, they were somewhat less likely to receive all recommended services. In terms of a usual source of care, we again found that adults with disabilities were more likely to have no usual source of care. We're more likely to have no usual source of care, and much more likely to have a provider. So the numbers were, it was about 49% less likely to have no usual source of care, and about 39% more likely to have a provider, and that we found no differences by type of disability for having a site as a usual source of care. Women were more likely than men to have a usual source of care. Blacks and Hispanics were more likely to have no usual source of care and less likely to have a provider relative to whites. Having a usual source of care increased with education and income. We found no differences by public and private insurance, and there were very strong regional effects across this entire study, which would be important for another piece of work. In terms, and then we look at the effect of having a usual source of care. We find that having a usual source of care is a very consistent predictor of receiving preventive services across every single measure that we have in our study. And I just give you an example there that individuals who smoked, if they had a site as a usual source of care, they were 60% more likely to receive counseling, and if they had a provider, they were 90% more likely. So they're actually pretty noticeable effects. Across services, the probability of screening was highest, and this is very consistent across services for a site, for a provider relative to a site. And individuals with disabilities were more likely to receive screening for most preventive services, the exception being screening for breast and cervical cancer. Women in general received more preventive services. Differences by race and ethnicity were mixed across the services. Education and income as both increased. Typically, the receipt of services increased at income that was observed most consistently for adults with incomes at 400% of the federal poverty level. We use a measure of public insurance. We didn't find a large effect from public insurance relative to private insurance. They were more likely to receive counseling for smoking with public insurance, but less likely to receive all preventive services. Consistent with much other previous work, if you are uninsured, you were much less likely to receive preventive services across the measures. And there were strong regional effects. So just in terms of some brief policy implications, I think although it's been demonstrated in previous research, I think that we show a very strong relation between having a usual source of care and receipt of preventive services. It's a very consistent effect, and it's a very large effect. I will say in our study, 26% of adults without disabilities did not have a usual source of care. Even among people with disabilities, those with basic limitations, so something like a functional impairment, 20% lacked a usual source of care. And even 10% of people with both a basic and complex limitation lacked a usual source of care. So there's still room there in terms of connecting people with disabilities to a usual source of care. That can happen with the insurance expansions upheld by the Supreme Court and a part of the Affordable Care Act, both through the Medicaid expansions, now optional, as well as the private insurance expansions. And there are also enhanced primary care payments that are time limited at this point, but should enhance access. I think our findings also demonstrate that the focus on some newer models of care, such as the medical home, are important ways to improve use of services, including preventive services, and they support continued work in expanding new models of primary care. Public insurance, our findings were somewhat mixed. We think that warrants additional investigation. I will say in this study we had a measure of just public insurance, and that has to do with sources of insurance when you're comparing people with and without disabilities. In other work, which will be presented Wednesday, when we focus on insurance just among adults with disabilities, we're able to look at Medicare effect, Medicaid effects, and dual coverage. And there you see some pretty consistent differences between having Medicare coverage versus Medicaid coverage. And just in terms of increasing receipt of preventive services, the insurance expansions, higher federal matching assistance percentage, and cost sharing in private plans that is eliminated, as well as Medicare, should facilitate that. And I'm out of time, and that's it. So thank you. And I'll welcome questions later. Thanks.
Thank you.